Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Lance Secretan, and he is one of the most insightful and provocative leadership teachers of our time. Today, we're going to be talking about his newly released book, A Love Story, an intensely personal memoir, and also his other book, The Spark, The Flame, and The Torch. Lance is the former CEO of a Fortune 100 company, university professor, award-winning columnist, and author of 15 books about inspiration and leadership. He coaches and advises leaders globally and guides leadership teams who wish to transform their culture into the most inspirational in their industries. When Lance's soulmate, Trisha, passed away, he was brokenhearted. During the darkest days of his grief, he wondered how he could draw a message of hope and joy for others from his own sadness. Everyone admired and was inspired by Lance and Trisha's happiness together and frequently asked them to share their secrets. Lance felt that the world needed to hear from behind the scenes about their remarkable union. The result was A Love Story, an intensely personal memoir. Lance's homage to their 30-year love journey. What an amazing story of love, devotion, and the true meaning of being as one. The 25 never-before-published poems in it will sing to every woman who has ever been in a loving relationship. The I Love Story will make you laugh, cry, and sigh, and perhaps have you yearning for one of your own. For more information about this book and all of his other books and so many of the things that Lance has to offer, you can visit his website, which is www.secretan.com. That's S-E-C-R-E-T-A-N.com. And I do have a direct link to Lance's website in the show page description. So there, I'd like to welcome Lance to the show. Good day, Lance.
Thank you. Great to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
It is my pleasure, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading A Love Story. It is quite a very heartfelt book that you put together there.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, you know, this is about, as I mentioned in the introduction, about your loving relationship with Trisha. So I think it's really important to start with, maybe if you can give us a little bit of insight into who Trisha was, her spirit.
Well, she was an amazing woman that everybody who knew her felt her energy and her presence. People used to say when we walked into a room together that they could feel the whole room just light up. And I'm sure that's more her than me. There was a beautiful energy that she shared. And she inspired a lot of people and was also mentor to many people. And when she passed away, so many people who made tributes to her talked about how she had changed their lives, she had taught them so much, made them feel better, and was inspiring. And so that's the kind of person that I had the good fortune to marry, and so I tried to reach up to the same standards while we were so beautifully tied together, and she taught me a great deal.
Yeah. Well, now, as I indicated in the introduction, you've written 15 business books over the last 40 years. So, and this one is obviously very, very different. So, obviously, you know, that inspiration that Trisha is actually and was, it's kind of obviously the inspiration for the book. So, how did you decide? Why did you decide to put this together? And, you know, because these are some very personal moments. And then also, why did you choose the format that you did?
Well, two reasons, really. One is that we very rarely share intimacy. Most of the things we write about in this form tend to be airbrushed a little bit. lot. Sometimes they're ghostwritten even, so it's even one party removed from the experiencer, as it were. So I wanted to write the rawness and the magic directly from my bones and from my heart. And so that was one thing. I wanted people to have a really good understanding of what that depth really feels like. I, as you said, I wanted to be sure that people also knew that they could hope to have the same thing. It's not out of our reach. It's not a magical thing that we all think is a fantasy and, you know, involves a knight and a white horse. It's not like that at all. And the other thing is that I had written poetry to Trish, my wife, over the years pretty consistently, starting with our vows and, well, actually even before that. And it occurred to me that there was sort of an archive here that I should do something with, but I wasn't sure what. And then I realized that if I built the story of our journey together and populated it with the poems, it would hang together and probably make some coherency for the reader. So I wanted it to be a very personal, moving experience for the reader, and also wanted it to be a physical experience. So you'll notice that the book is very beautiful. The artwork is produced by a very good friend of mine who does amazing Celtic round work, Celtic work, and also, you know, Ragged Edges and a silk bookmark. I don't make books much like that anymore. Just beautifully bound, you know, and so on. So the whole thing is a luxurious journey into what so many people yearn for.
Yeah, you know, the silk marker, you know, it, I have encountered in the 5 years, of almost 6 years I've done the show, and have read hundreds of books, literally. This is only the third one, and you're only the second author who has ever had that little silk marker in the book. And I remember whenever I see that, to me, it just it really just seems to set the intention of elegance and importance for what
it's
in.
Well, it's almost like a metaphor, isn't it? Because a great romantic relationship requires attention to detail and to beauty, and so the book is a reference to that. So you'll notice too that there's artwork in the inside of the book, and also two colors, not just one, which is the traditional way. So these little touches are artistic finishes that make it rise above the ordinary book, and this relationship rose above the ordinary relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So now with the, obviously, you know, with such a long journey that you had together, there obviously were many, many, many wonderful moments. So how did you determine what ones you were going to select to put in the book?
That's a great question. And, you know, as I, now the book is some months old, and there are stories that I think, oh, I wish I'd put that one in, you know, right? So there are so many. Maybe there's another book coming, I don't know. But, yeah, endless magical moments, just endless magical moments. And the connection, as you know from the book, with nature was a very important part of that. And we were both very physical and athletic, so a lot of that as well. Just endless moments of joy.
Yeah. You know, as I was going through it and reading, you know, you basically have a bit of a story, and then you, as you put in the book, you tie it together with a ribbon, with a poem or two at the end. To me, it seemed that the experiences that you put in the book were like everyday kinds of experiences that people could have in their life. So, I mean, to me, it was kind of like a framework to see this is what love looks like. You know, this is the experience that you too can do right now if you want.
Yes, absolutely. And it is turning an ordinary moment into a loving moment. And I don't mean just romantic moment, but a loving moment, a moment where you're devoting yourself to the other person and saying, what can I do that serves you now?
Yeah, it was, they were wonderful. So now, you know, with the idea of poetry, I just want to kind of talk a little bit about that, because I think I read in the book that you said that in your 15 other books that you maybe had, you know, inserted a poem or two here or there, even though you've been doing it. So, you know, one of the things that I remember a long time ago, I had a guest call in one time, and we were talking about writing. And one of the things that she said is, I don't write anything major, just poetry. And, you know, that just I mean, it really just stuck, you know, with me. You know, that was probably several years ago now. But, you know, I think it kind of plays to the idea that sometimes poetry isn't as important or major or doesn't have as much impact as maybe a novel or that kind of thing. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I think, of course, some people, poetry just is a turnoff. But aside from that, there are two things which I've written a little bit about why poetry is important at the front of the book. And there are two things, I think. One is that it's much harder to write poetry. You can write stream of consciousness writing and then just tidy it up with editing. But poetry requires quite a lot of internal construction to make the sentence sound right and to make a rhythm to it. So you don't have to worry about that when you're just writing text, as it were. And the second thing is that when you write text, you are pretty literal. So I could say to you, you know, I go to the front door, and you know exactly what I mean. But if I say to you, I enter another world, that's a different, you have to work a bit harder to figure out what that actually means. What are the worlds, you know, and where did you come from, and so on. So the opportunity with poetry is to be a little less obvious and to have the reader work a little harder and also use their imagination, because when you don't quite know exactly what the meaning is, you invent it yourself, and then therefore you're actually writing what you're reading.
Yeah, that's very, you know, very true. I mean, the idea of working harder to put it together. Also, it seems that, you know, you part of the beauty of a poem is simplicity and the emotional connection. I mean, it seems that those two aspects are some of the key components into at least the good poetry that I've read.
Well, that's not for me to say, is it? That's for the reader to
observe. Okay.
So that would be for you to comment on.
Okay. All right. Okay. One of the things that I kind of want to talk a little bit about, like an example, given an example of one of the stories that was in the book. And one of them that I found particularly heartfelt was the eloping, you know, story, and then the subsequent wedding vows. So if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to share with the listeners exactly kind of what that was all about, just so they can get a good idea of what's contained in the book.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this is that we have both been married before, and we were very guarded about being married again, not because we didn't think we could pull it off, but because we had noticed that so many of our friends had lived together for quite a number of years and then got married and everything fell apart. And I didn't go into, neither of us did, into the science of why that was, but just like, oh, it doesn't look good, let's not do that. And so, meanwhile, I always knew that Trish's mother, with whom I had a fabulous relationship, would love for us to be married, just because she was old-fashioned and it meant a lot to her. So I sort of secretly thought, I will do this one day, and I plotted a wedding, a secret wedding, at a high ropes event course that I was running. So this is like climbing walls and, you know, zip lines and so on in a retreat in New Mexico. And I was going to propose to her jumping off the top of a 60-foot telephone pole. And then at the last minute, the event was canceled. So all my plans went awry. And then what happened was I planned again, tried to find the right venue. And I had a client assignment in Bermuda. So I started all over again and planned a new assignment and a new wedding arrangement there. And that's where we eventually got married. But there was a bit of a snag to this, which is that just 3 weeks before the due date of getting married there, and she didn't know anything about it, of course, this was a secret, I broke my leg in 9 places in a ski accident. And so I said to her, you know, I need invite you to come with me to Bermuda because I can't carry my briefcase and I'm being crutches and so on, so it'll be really difficult. So she said, oh, okay. And then she said, so do I need a dress? Do you think we'll have any cocktail parties or anything? And I said, yeah, there will probably be. Why don't you pull something out? So she pulls out a blue one, and I said, nah, I don't think so. And then she pulls out a yellow one. And I said, yeah, it's all right, but no, try again. And she pulls out a white one, and I said, oh, that's perfect. So we packed a white dress, and off we went, and we got married on the top of a cliff called Aswood Cove in Bermuda. The little minister went in his Bermuda short, says, so, does anybody have the wedding rings? And, of course, Trisha's saying, wedding rings? Ooh, we didn't think of that. And I said, oh, yeah, I did. I got them here. I had them made. And so we had these beautiful wedding rings, which now I wear hers as my signet ring on my little finger. And we had the usual question, does anybody have any objection to why these two should be, you know, joined together in holy matrimony? And, of course, we looked around, and there was a whole bunch of tourists looking on and taking pictures and so on. And then the next day I made my speech. And, of course, people in the audience were pointing, saying, hey, that's the guy that was on top of the cliff getting married. So we had a great, great time. And we wrote our vows on the beach in between when I proposed to her. And the proposal was kind of interesting, too, because we got in the back of a car and off we went to a lovely restaurant. And I said to Trish, would you marry me? And she looks at me and she says, no, well, I mean, we already agreed this. No, I don't want to do that. And I was getting nervous now. Oh, this is not going well. So she said, no, I mean, really, would you marry me? And she said, oh, okay, fine. Yeah, of course. And she said, when? I said, how about day after tomorrow? And she gulped. You know, and then everything started to come into place for her, and she realized she'd been had. But we had a delightful time in Bermuda.
Wow, yeah. You know, the one thing that I also loved about that story is, you know, the actual vows that were written.
Yeah.
You have that as like the poem at the end of that story. And those are, I mean, it's probably to me, it seemed the most simple, loving, and respectful few words, you know, that I've ever read.
I say them daily.
Yeah.
Still, yeah, it's just, yeah, two verses.
Yeah, it's really great. And you know, speaking of saying them daily, I know that, you know, those, basically at the end of the book, you have a message, you got a message from Trisha, you
right.
know, having to deal with those vows, because now that she's in spirit, they don't, you know, necessarily, you know, they're a little incongruent with the, you know, one
right.
being in. So you got a message to kind of shift them or change them a little
right.
bit.
Right, exactly. So it was a different message. Would you like me to
sure.
share it with you?
Absolutely, please.
The second message that she shared with me goes like this. It's just a small tweak to the original vows, but it changes the relationship where she's not here anymore on this physical plane, but she wants me to know that the vows are still solid, and this is how it goes. I want you to know that I love you even more than our earlier days. I will love and protect you, hold your hand and embrace you every day, all the time, and always. The rest of our lives are as one. Every day, both our heartbeats will blend. I'll make rain seem like dew. I'll make you smile when you're blue. That's forever and ever. Amen.
Yeah, that was just, that's so beautiful. You know, and, you know, when I read that to me, it seemed, you know, because you mentioned that you, you know, read your vows every day, you know, and reading that message, to me, that, you know, for people who have, whose loved ones have crossed over into spirit, to me that is such a peaceful kind of message to communicate back and forth.
Yes, and I add my own bits to it. You know, when I come to the line, I'll make you smile when you're blue, I say, do it now, Trish, do it now. I need it now. Do it now. I'm having a hard day, you know. I want Trish to do that now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, that obviously, you know, the love is strong, and you know, I believe that that is the one thing that is that transcends time and space and all kinds of bounds, is that loving connection, you know, and you know, and anything that you can do to continue it, to support it, to me, it just strengthens that bond.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, what is it? I do know also in the story you indicated, too, that you even officiated at a wedding and were able to pay it forward in a way, those vows as well.
Right. Well, that's a lovely way to have a gift, isn't it, to be able to share something that gave us so much joy. So I said to the person that I officiated at their wedding for them, you have a wedding and a marriage that was half as beautiful as the one we had, you're in heaven. So this carries a lot of karma. And, you know, the gift that's in the energy of these vows is enormous. So hopefully, you know, that's the way it will be for others.
Yeah, yeah. So are you still writing poems, poetry?
I am. Yes, I am.
Okay, well, good.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you know, and I guess, you know, if, you know, what is it that you, for, you know, do you hope that readers are going to be able to learn or to discover or to take away, you know, from reading about this, a love story?
I think this is, I think this is an escape. You know, in some ways, do you remember a book called, they made it into a movie with Robert Redford.
You mean the love story with Ally McGraw and...
No, that's
different one. Okay.
Yeah, that's earlier. No, it was Bridges of
Madison County. No.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, that's
okay. Okay.
Sort of a romantic escape.
Okay.
Right. You sort of get transported into a lovely land of beauty, where people are so connected to each other that most of the ugliness of life doesn't really matter, you know, because you're creating your own world. And that's really the only world we've got, is our own world, the world that we create. So in that sense, you know, we just need to make our own world, and this is a good example of that. I think this is what I hope people will gain from it. But I think the other thing is that, you know, I've heard people tell me this, people buy it, this book, and read it to each other at night, last thing.
Oh.
Because it's a way to have a romantic closing to the day. Just one little chapter, you know, or one verse before they go to sleep at night. And I think the other thing is that I've been told this by a number of readers, too, is that it gives them ideas about what they could be doing, too.
Yeah.
And kick up their game a little bit, you know, so that it's a little bit more ambitious in the romantic relationship. It's kind of sad how many relationships are either broken or not working or finished.
You know, it is, and you know, it's, you know, it seems like you know in yours and Trish's relationship that you gave it attention. You made, you know,
right.
You know, and that you know, obviously the writing of the poems and the sharing of those wonderful moments, you know, and also with nature. You know, I love that you set aside time to be in nature.
Yes.
You know, to do that. You know, those kinds of things. I think people don't give the time to, and you know, and also, I mean, if they read your book, you know, they recognize just how transient life is, how it can change in the blink of an eye, you know, and how important it is to really, you know, kind of give attention to that love relationship.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, gosh, well, we're about halfway through the show already, and I want to take just a quick commercial break here for about 90 seconds, and I do want to invite listeners that if you would like to call in with any questions, feel free to call in. The number is 619-789-4359, and for those of you listening in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in there, and then when we come back, I want to kind of change gears a little bit here and talk about the book, The Spark, the Flame, and the Torch. And I do also find it very interesting. We have in the chat room, we have one of my wonderful followers, Roger, but we also have a Trisha, who I've never seen before in the chat room. So I guess it's really synchronistic here. We got yeah. Trisha listening. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Lance Secretan, and we talked in the first half of the show about his new book, A Love Story, an Intensely Personal Memoir. And then with the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the other book called The Spark, the Flame, and the Torch, Inspire Self, Inspire Others, and Inspire the World. You can find out more about Lance and his other books, blog. He has just so much to offer at his website, the Secretan Center. You can visit them at www.secretan.com, and that's SECRETAN.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, we're back. Hello, Lance. Thanks for staying with me.
Good to be here.
Great. Okay. And I just found out that it's your assistant there who's listening in.
Right.
So great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Trisha. Okay. So anyway, I want to talk now. Obviously, since my show is Bringing Inspiration to Earth, inspiration is my number one love, I would say. And in your book, the Spark, the Flame, and the Torch really is, I found, very, very interesting in so many different ways. So I guess let's start with, the idea of the spark, flame, and the torch. So what are they, and how do they relate to inspiration?
Well, let me start, as it were, at the beginning.
Okay.
So when I finished my stint running Manpower Limited, which I did for 14 years, I taught at university, and I wrote a book then because I didn't like the books that were given to me as texts to teach from, and I wanted my own thinking. It didn't resemble anything like I'd been doing for 14 years, so I wrote my own book, and it was called Managerial Moxie, and it was a management book, typical textbook, 465 pages, 20 pages of footnotes, and so on. And as I started to work more with consulting and work outside I realized that actually it was more about leadership that we should be focusing on, not so much on management, that I had sort of been looking at this in a rather old-fashioned way. So I began to write work about leadership and teaching more about that and researching it and consulting, coaching, and so on. Over the years, I got to a place where I realized that leadership is simply not working. We spend $170 billion a year on leadership development. We've got 244,000 books on Amazon.com about leadership.
Wow.
Every guru, mountain climber, speech maker, actor, athlete is making speeches about leadership. We're teaching it at MBA programs and universities, and it's broken everywhere. So, you know, only a lunatic would keep doing all this stuff and spending all this money when we're getting such terrible results. It seems that almost every year we're getting worse results, not better ones. So then the question becomes, well, what do we actually want? And the answer to that is inspiration. We're not looking for leadership. We don't even know how to describe leadership. We're looking for inspiration. We want to be inspired. We want leaders who are inspiring. Now, I'll just go to the book we were just talking about for a moment. What that book is, A Love Story, is about the most inspiring relationship I've had in my life. And that's what I think the next iteration is. It's not just about inspiration. It's about inspiring relationships. So a brand is an inspiring relationship, the brand you love. We have inspiring relationships with, for example, food or with movies or poems or music or theater or opera or friends or God or nature or our spouses or kids. They're all about inspiring relationships. And when they are no longer inspiring, then we walk away from them. So The Spark of Flame and the Torch was a book I wrote when I sort of stopped for a minute, looked back over the previous 14 books. And this was before I wrote A Love Story. And wondered, what was really good about what I had written over those previous 30 years or so, and what was terrible, and what could be improved, and what was new. And I put this all together into a new recipe. And so the whole concept of that book is this. It's about inspiration. That's the most important thing that we need to focus on. It's the second most important thing in our lives, the first being that we need to love and be loved. But the second is to be inspired and to inspire. And then the question is, well, how do you do that? And the answer is, you first of all have to fill up your own tank. So you become inspired. So inspiring self, that's the spark. We light that spark, and then when we fill up our own tank with inspiration, now we're in a position where we can inspire others. That's the flame. And when the flame is burning brightly, we're able then to inspire the world. That's the torch. So that's the whole concept of that book.
Yeah. Now, when we're talking about inspiring, what does inspiration look like? How is it manifest? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The history of where we're at with leadership, and one of the reasons why it's so broken, is that we actually use motivation as a principal way of getting things done. If you think about it, motivation is about exploiting the behavior of others, trying to change the behavior of others, trying to control the behavior of others. So motivation, which is a fear-based system, and it's a system based on my needs, not yours, is what we use, for example, in marketing. Buy this product or you'll be ugly. Or in academia, pass this exam or I'll fail you. Or in parenting, do what I say or I'll punish you. Or in religion, join my religion or you'll go to hell. Or in politics, vote for me or the bad guys will get you. Or in business, do what I say or I'll fire you. So it doesn't really matter, you know, where we look, healthcare, follow this protocol or you'll die. So there's no end to the ways in which we have figured out the mechanism by which we try and create fear in others and therefore coerce them into different behavior. Now, that's our system in society, it's our system for leadership, and it's our system for human resource management and so on. It's basically the ruling paradigm, and you'll see it in today's political system right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, inspiration is almost the opposite. Inspiration is not about fear, it's about love. It's not about what I need, it's about you. And if you think about people who've inspired you in your life, there are people who made an impression on you, there are people who loved you, and there are people who wanted to serve you, not themselves, you. They didn't need anything. They wanted you to do well. So I describe motivation as lighting a fire under someone, and inspiration is lighting a fire within someone. And there's a world of difference between these two, but we talk about motivation and inspiration like they're the same thing. I want to be motivated and inspired. But they're actually almost exactly opposite. And what we have become experts in is motivation, fear-based, and what we want to grow now is our capacity for inspiration. So we need manuals on inspiration. We need leadership theories based on inspiration. We need to build inspiration into our relationships and our parenting, everywhere in our lives. That people will do things when they're inspired to and they won't when they're not. So the key to everything in life is therefore about inspiration. So how do we get inspired? Three things. One, well, there are probably 500 things, but three important ones I've mentioned in my book. One is we need to know who we are. You can't go through life without knowing who you are and be inspired. So a higher purpose, what's the point of your life, your destiny? How are you going to live your life? How will you be known? That's your character statement, as it were. And lastly, what's your calling? What are you going to do with your gifts and skills and talents, and how will you use them to serve the world? That's what we call the why be do, because it answers three questions. Why are you here? How are you going to be? What are you going to do? And it kind of answers the question that, you know, I joke with people that you're in heaven one day and God calls you into the boardroom and says, hey, I got this assignment on Earth. I haven't finished it yet. It's called Planet Earth, and I need someone to wrap it up. Would you go down there for me and spend 100 years or so and knock it off? And I'll give you everything you need to support you. Just call me anytime, and off you go to Earth, and you're there for 100 years. You come back to heaven. God calls you into the boardroom. God says, so how did you do? And your answer to that is your why be do. Your answer to that is your destiny. Well, here, I made the world better by doing the following. A character statement is, you know, I'm going to be an inspiring and loving person, or whatever your characteristics are. So if you did those things, then you've made the world a better place, and perhaps you wrapped up the assignment. So that's one thing. The second is to have a dream. So few people have a dream, and this is true in the corporate world as well as personally. So organizations mostly have mission statements. Boring. What we really need is a dream. Dreams power great organizations. And lastly, we need to build inspiring relationships. We need to make sure that every relationship at work is inspiring. And there are so many people at work, I know, who simply can't stand the people they work with. So that's the spark. If we get those three things together, that fills up our tank. There are many other things we could be doing, but those are three really big things, and they make an incredible difference to our lives.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, that one of the things you mentioned, just for the listeners to know, that you mentioned like a character statement. In your book, you have at the end of certain chapters, and I'll talk about those in a second, but you have a space for people to write their own, create their own destiny statement,
right,
or their own character statement, so, or your own calling statement. So it seems that, you know, with that book, you want people to really take the information and examine their life and help maybe, I guess, ignite that spark.
Yes, and actually I can tell you that if you go to my website and go to secretan.com/YBDo, then you'll find hundreds of those statements that people have posted over the years, and get some really good inspiration from the hard work of many other people who have already created their own destiny, character, and calling statements, and you can, you know, borrow and patch and create your own from there.
That's great. Great. I made a note to go check that out. And as a side note, one of the other things that you have at secretan.com, and it's at the very end of the book, is an Inspire Pledge for people to pledge to be inspirational. And I already signed it, so I'm sharing it. So I'm helping you on your way to creating that little group there.
Thank you, Robert.
Sure. So one of the things, you know, in the book that you have it basically broken down into three parts, the spark, the flame, and the torch. But within them, you have and I won't say chapters, they're kind of segments, and you call them reflections, you know,
right.
12 reflections. Why reflections?
Well, I think chapters is kind of an old-fashioned word, so I think these are, you know, I want to write something here for folks to reflect on. It's not a lecture. It's not a chunk of writing. It's something for people to pause on and reflect on. And so, for example, in the section which I call The Flame, which is about inspiring others, this consists of something called the Castle Principles. And we discovered these by asking people what they did not like about leaders. And the answer to that was they didn't like cowards. They didn't like people who were phony. They didn't like people who were selfish. They didn't like people who lied. They didn't like people who ruled with fear. And they didn't like idiots. Now, these six characteristics are actually the predominant features that you'll find in so many leaders. So we reasoned then, well, if people don't like that, why don't we do the opposite? And the opposite is as follows: courage, authenticity, service, truthfulness, love, and effectiveness. An acronym which is CASEL. And so we call these the CASEL principles because people love people, not just leaders, but people generally, who are courageous, authentic, serve others, tell the truth, are loving, and effective. And so if you live the CASEL principles every day, then you become a person who inspires others.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one of the things, you know, in many of the cases, you know, we're talking about, you know, business and, you know, work kind of environment, but truly this, you know, the CASEL principles can be used to inspire anyone within your circle or anyone
absolutely.
Around you. So to me, that's, you know, because some people feel that, you know, maybe they're place in the world maybe not as significant as some others because they don't touch as many, but that's not the case. They have the ability to inspire anyone, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of an old-fashioned thought anyway, isn't it, these days? I mean, you've got 12-year-old kids who have 10 million followers on YouTube. So, I mean, there's not a high or an up or a down. There's just relevance, really. That's the only thing that really counts now.
Yeah, very much so. So now we talked about, and the one thing I do want to kind of go back to a little bit too is you mentioned the one dream.
Yes.
So, you know, and that is the one thing, you know, that was the one section in the book I read, but I really want to go back through and read again because it's, to me, it's a, when it comes to management, you know, that, you know, the idea of you know, putting a direction toward a one dream versus the old mission, vision, values kinds of things.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, because I have a corporate background history, and I can't tell you how many mission, you know, vision and value statements I had to do, and it's like, oh, when I look at that, it's like, oh man, I could have saved a whole lot of time if I just, you know, shifted a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically, I always joke with people that, you know, in an audience, when I'm giving a keynote, how many of you have mission statements? And give them all to me and put them on a pile on the floor and shuffle them all up, and then I'll give them back to you at random. You wouldn't know if you got your own back or not. You know, because they all say the same thing. They all have, you know, largest, best, you know, highest quality and blah, blah, blah. And we have basically done this over and over again, as you say, in every iteration of employment that everybody has. So you go from one company to another company. I've actually done this not long ago. I sent three CEOs of healthcare systems their mission statements only shuffled. And they didn't know whether they got their own back or not.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, this is why do we keep doing these things over and over? Like, okay, we're going to have this big deal now. We're going to write a new mission statement. Why? It's so broken and so bad. What would be the point of that?
Yeah.
But a dream, now that's a whole higher order of thinking. And a dream, when you think about it, doesn't matter who we're talking about here, whether we're talking about General Motors or whether we're talking about you or me. When we have a dream, we're inspired. I live in Colorado half the year, and I ski with some of the best skiers on the planet, and Copper Mountain, where I live, is the home to the U.S. National Ski Team. So the best skiers in the world show up there, Bodie Miller and Lindsey Vonn and so on. Ted Ligety, all the great names, plus all the national teams from everywhere else, because it's the only World Cup downhill race that's set up in the entire world at that point. So the best skiers are all in this one tiny resort, plus a whole pile of youngsters from about 5-6 years old, all in camps. There must be 200 or 300 of those camps. So the place is just swarming with these skiers. Now, I can tell you this. Not one of those people has a mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
They have a dream.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Now, why are they inspired? Why are they good at what they do? They've got a dream. They want to go to the Olympics. They want to be really good at what they do. They want to stand on the podium. They have a dream. And they have a mission statement, like, I want to be the best skier in slalom. You know, that's just not going to fly. It would never show up there. Why do we waste our time in the corporate world doing that, or anywhere else in our world?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, it really is a shift in attention, you know, to a dream versus that mission. So now, whenever you talk with people who are businessmen, who you know, kind of throw out the idea of, you know, a dream is a kind of what to work toward versus that mission, values, and vision. Do you also stress how important it is that the castle principles be built into that dream?
Yes, absolutely, because that's the way we get to the dream.
Okay.
We need to, you think about anything. Let's take our skiing athlete again. Needs to be courageous, needs to be authentic, needs to serve, needs to be truthful, like I'm hurting or I'm not good enough or I'm in pain or I need to practice more or whatever is the truth that you need to be saying. And you need to be loving in both the relationship with the coach and with others, and you need to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we get to the dream.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you absolutely have me there with inspiring others through those principles. Now, the torch aspect of inspire the world, that one seems lofty, or is it?
Well, I think that's what we want to be doing. I hope that you and I are doing that right now. I hope that we are this little corner of the universe that you and I are occupying is going to be inspiring the world. The more people that listen, the more inspiring the waves, the little pond that we've thrown a stone into will reach. And I think that's what we're trying to do. So the way we do that is by coaching and teaching and by helping people to grow in all kinds of ways. And the way that I've expressed that in that chapter is that we do basically three things in the world, all of us. They are mastery, undertaking whatever we do to the highest standards of which we're capable, chemistry, relating well with others, and delivery, identifying the needs of others and meeting them. Mastery, chemistry, and delivery. That covers everything we do. This program that you're running today requires mastery. You got to do what you do well.
Mm-hmm.
It requires chemistry. You need to relate to other people. And it requires delivery. You need to meet the needs of those people. You do those three things, you've got the whole waterfront covered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't wake up in the morning and just do those things. You have to do some things that get you there. And the things that get you there are called accelerators. And the accelerators for each of those are as follows. Mastery, that requires learning. The more we learn, the greater the mastery. Chemistry requires empathizing. The more we empathize with other people, the greater the chemistry. Delivery requires listening. The more we listen to people, the better we are at identifying their needs and meeting them. So these six go together. The primary values we call mastery, chemistry, delivery, and the three accelerators, learning, empathizing, and listening. And you can actually calculate whether you're growing or not. So, for example, if you are a 10 in mastery and a 6 in learning, you're not growing. You're very, very good at the mastery which you're practicing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not investing enough in learning to sustain that. So that some point in the future, your mastery is not going to be as good as it is today. So we actually have a dynamic system here for measuring what your future looks like and how much influence you have in the world.
So that's interesting as far as the, you know, the mastery and the learning. Now, with chemistry and the empathizing, I mean, is that, you know, to me, is it, I mean, how do you learn empathy? You don't really, you have to really do it. Don't you have to put yourself in situations and actually feel the feelings?
Well, yes, exactly. But there are some steps you have to do first, I think, which is one, it's really not about you.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a breakthrough from a majority of people. Just to shut down the ego temporarily and try and put yourself in another person's shoes and feel what they feel. Not think what they feel, but feel what they feel. Now, most people have a lot of challenge with that because, you know, for instance, we tend to be thinking about ourselves in relation to how am I coming off now? Is this working in this conversation? And what do I need to do differently now? And so on. It's all about me. Whereas if we start focusing on the other person, you know, that's a way in which we start to grow the capacity to empathize. It's quite easy. The difficult part is letting go of our own egos.
Okay.
And then
Great. Listening
is the same, by the way, because most of the time when we're talking, then we think that not talking is listening, but it isn't.
Right.
Listening is not talking. And typically, so many people will be rehearsing their next great speech while the other person is talking, so they're not listening anyway. And as soon as they see a window, they jump in and deliver their masterpiece, but they haven't heard what was being said, and they certainly haven't understood the feelings of the other person.
Yeah, I've been in that case, you know, those circumstances many a time, and it's... It just doesn't make you feel good when you're there talking to someone and you know you're not being heard, either people aren't listening to you.
Right.
Yeah, it just kind of and you know it to me it really it's just not very respectful, you know, in a way. You know, I just to me, I guess also probably because you know I'm doing the radio show for as long as I have too. I know every 3 days of the week I am actively listening, you know, and speaking, and I do more listening than I do talking, I hope.
And you're very good at it, too, by the way. I've noticed that during this conversation. I've noticed, for example, how when we both end up speaking, you tend to be the one that stops. And you know, that's not common. Usually it's a matter of volume. Whoever's talking loudest gets to prevail.
Yeah.
And you do that very well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And just to let you know that my Inspire pledge I did on your website, it was for today's listeners that I hoped to inspire. So I think I'm right there, right along with what my goal was for today. So
you should share that with everybody, too, because that could start a movement.
That would be great. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, and that, see, to me, you know, when I first started the show, it was actually – probably about 10 years ago, I had a very intuitive friend tell me one time that she saw my goal, my destiny, was bringing inspiration to Earth. I mean, she used those actual words. I mean, then it resonated with me so much. I mean, truly, I mean, even now it gives me chills, you know, thinking about it, because it just seemed, you know, that is exactly what it was. And then it took me, you know, a while before I had this particular format to do that. But to me, it's like, you know, if you can inspire people to do and be more, to be and do more, you know, for themselves and for the world, then heck, you know, you're really leaving the world in a much better place than when you came in, and you actually, you know, have actually accomplished something.
Well, this is your dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is.
You can see how inspired you are. Like you say, it gives you chills. We don't get chills from a mission statement. We don't get chills from
no.
being motivated. You get chills from being inspired, and you get inspired because you have a dream.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, boy, you know, this has really been a great conversation, Lance. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and I could talk to you for hours.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you too.
It's my pleasure. So, you know, any final words, anything that you have up and coming, anything that you would like for the listeners to know, you know, about either about you or what maybe the Secretan Center has up and coming?
Well, I'm working on a whole new concept, which is, we talked earlier about the fact that leadership is completely broken. So if you were to take the characteristics of a great romantic relationship, such as intimacy, vulnerability, listening, respect, passion, love, these words would be the words that you would use to guide the very best romantic relationship. Now, here's the question. Why don't we just do that everywhere? Why do we have these special systems that we use in work or in church or in other leadership situations? I was talking to somebody today. We're having lunch, and I was discussing the fact that she's very active in the church, and I was saying, you know, the church is one of the worst places for relationships.
Uh-huh.
People are always fighting in the church. Why is that? I mean, if you just followed the Ten Commandments, you wouldn't be doing that. But if you followed the recipe for building a powerful romantic relationship, you wouldn't do it either. So I'm going to suggest we take the romantic ingredients, the ingredients of a great romantic relationship, use them everywhere. Frankly, it's as simple as that.
Wow. Well, I look forward to learning more about that, you know, creating love everywhere, you know, those intimate relationships, you know, and you know, again, to me, it's, you know, it's that love, that relationship, that bond that transcends time and space. And to me, the more you have that connection, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like you become immortal in a way, you know, in the sense that, you know, what you leave behind has an impression, leaves an impression, makes, you know, makes lives better, you know, and that's, you know, I don't know. I don't think there's anything more one could ask for in a lifetime.
No, that's a powerful legacy, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you, Lance. Now, I am following you on Twitter, and I've liked your Facebook page. So for people out there who use those social media platforms, definitely invite you to join Lance there. So I look forward to following your journey and learning more, too, in the future.
Thank you, and I've enjoyed this conversation very much.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Lance Secretan, and we've been talking about his new book, A Love Story, an Intensely Personal Memoir, and also The Spark, the Flame, and the Torch, Inspire Self, Inspire Others, and Inspire the World. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.secretan.com, and that's secretan.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.